Welcome. Hey Jessica, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Very good. We have a smaller group today. Number of people sent me notes. Christmas holiday week stuff. But we'll still have a good time. How are you doing?
Am doing well, counting down the days. I can't believe it's Christmas time and almost the new year already.
And where are you?
Me personally, I'm in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Virginia Beach. Okay, very good.
Where I'm guessing you're somewhere on the West Coast.
Yeah, I'm in Phoenix, actually. Sort of like the
Oh.
yeah.
Oh, nice.
Dorothy's in Chicago. I don't know if you can hear us,
Ooh.
Dorothy, but
Yeah,
you're
hey.
in for like a really brutally cold Christmas, are you not?
Yeah, we were actually supposed to go to Ohio tomorrow and we ended up canceling it because we don't want to get stuck there. So we're going to be hibernating this weekend, which I'm kind of excited about, to be honest.
I'm so glad to hear that. Yes, this is a year to stay indoors if you are in the north. Davia, welcome. How are you? Are you
I'm
muted?
great. I've had meetings all day long. That's why this look today, I'm just like ready
You
to go
look
to
great.
sleep.
If you've had meetings all day long, you're doing great. Where are you calling from?
I'm actually the mountains of Georgia, Dahlonega, Georgia.
Ah, very good. Okay. So you're avoiding some of the cold.
We don't
That's
worry.
good.
We're supposed to be getting like 10 degrees on Friday, so we'll be getting it.
Oh man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
David, would you be willing to just introduce yourself briefly so others know who you are? I think this is your first call, if I'm not mistaken.
It is. I'm the CEO of Healthcare Partners. We are a medical billing virtual assistant company that provides support services to mental health practices. Jessica Kennard is actually my VP of operations.
Oh, great. Okay.
So yeah, we're going to tag team this. We've got to do something to move forward.
Okay. What's the biggest challenge you guys are facing right now? And
Employee buy.
how many people are you dealing with?
We have 26 people.
Okay.
It seems like we have a lot of revolving door at times. We get really good people in, and then either they go and find better positions, which I don't blame them, but and I promote that, but it feels like it's we get bad people in, and then we have to let them go, and then it's just employee buy-in. And our biggest thing is communication. I've been
Okay.
watching your videos and stuff. It seems like I can say one thing, and then I have 15 people hear 15 different things, you know.
Yes.
Or I've been trying to use some more tools. I think, Jessica, correct me if I'm wrong, I really think we need to have more of an employee buy-in as to
Okay.
what we're doing. So it feels like it's slowly starting to go that way, but I'd love to retain the people we have because everybody's working great. But I'm going to have to start bringing other people in eventually so I can grow my company.
And so are you, when you say buy-in, do you mean like they're not bought into some higher vision, or is it like they're just not doing the things you're telling them they need to do?
Both, but probably they're not doing the things that we're telling them to do. For example, we have certain reports due on Wednesday and Thursdays or Fridays. And finally, I went to them a couple of weeks ago and said, "Look, we're adults here. Y'all know when your reports are due. I shouldn't be asking you. Shouldn't be asking you. And if you're late, you should be coming to me telling me why they're late. Nobody's going to get in trouble. I just want to know what's going on and do I need to help you?" And since I came to them and said, "Look, this is what we're doing, and you're not telling me, we'll have a conversation on Friday." I don't think we're having that issue anymore since I was just, don't know. So, but those are the small things. I think we've created a team of handholding too. We need to create these teams of self-management so that Jessica and I are not answering questions all day long on should I add a 95 modifier? How should I respond to this provider? How should I respond to this patient? I'm telling them every day, I trust you. It's the first time I really trusted this team. I would really love to see y'all working together a lot more. So I
Okay,
think
great.
buy-in, listening, communication, and getting them to do what they need to be doing.
Okay, great.
Sorry.
Nothing to apologize for. You're in the right place. That's the stuff that we deal with for sure. And as we go, I won't be able to solve all those problems here on this call today, but we'll get you started and I'll be sure to get you pointed in the right direction. Debbie, welcome. And Jessica, what is your role?
I'm her VP, so I'm kind of just under her. I try to manage the issues, you know, before they get to her. We're trying to really create a tiered, I guess you would call it like a hierarchy, like a, you know, a system, a flow of our company. And so basically I, hopefully my role is to eventually being able to handle anything before it gets to Davey and kind of just using Davey as a last resort.
Okay, great. Awesome. Thank you for your introduction. Debbie, a little quick intro from you. What your role is, tell me about your organization, what your challenges are.
I work with Davey and Jessica too. I'm just a supervisor. So great. I kind of help Jessica with the employees, answer questions, oversee. I'm part of the AR team, which is the accounts receivable team. We go over all the agings, outstanding balances, kind of like dig and do a little bit of research and stuff to figure out why the balances are still there. I do help out with the billing and stuff too, if they have questions, software issues, programs, stuff like that.
All right, great, thank you. All right, so what we're gonna do today, and typically how we do this is I run through a little teaching. I'll take some content, some of it's usually in the modules. Sometimes I'll get something that isn't in the modules, and so I bring it here. It's recorded, if you wanna go back and watch it, you can. Today I'm gonna do some cherry picking out of module 3. And the way it works is over the 12 weeks, I literally just cycle through all of the key talking points that I want to make. And so you're going to jump in kind of in module 3 when I started this cycle. And if you stay for the whole 12 weeks, you'll get access to everything that I've been talking about. Anything that you don't sort of, if you miss a week on the coaching call, most of the time you're going to be able to find what you missed on the actual modules. And what I'll do is I try to like keep it pretty short, and then I open it for questions and answers so we can interact with whatever the actual training was that I just did today, or we can talk about anything else that's going on and kind of on your mind. And we'll start from there. So let's do this. I'm going to share my screen. Today we're going to be talking about, so last week we closed out our how to have hard conversations training. And today we're going to start talking about how to have performance conversations. So definitely related to what you all are dealing with. And this is really important because performance conversations are more delicate and also more easily misunderstood. And the reason is because your whisper is a shout. When you communicate down through power, what you say and how you say it gets amplified. The size of your megaphone is proportionate to the scale of your organization. So when I was the pastor of a church of 300, I had a certain size of megaphone. So anything I said was amplified by the scale, the perceived scale that I was presiding over. When I was then the pastor of a church of 6,000 people, I had no idea how much louder my voice was. So anything I would say would be profoundly amplified way beyond, you know, even just a slight suggestion could be really heard as a commandment from on high. And that was really unique for me. I didn't know that. And so, you know, if you're at a smaller scale, it still exists. The dynamic is still there, but I'm just giving you a sense for the fact that it's proportion and it scales. So here are one of the most common things that I get from leaders is, how do I get people to do the thing that I want them to do? I've told them to do it, and then they don't do it. Why don't they do it? And there are lots of complex reasons for that. Today, I'm going to focus only on your responsibility as a communicator and how to actually have these conversations, how to think through them, how to structure them, all the fun things there. So, something's gone on weird with Zoom where I can't really advance slides. I can, but it pauses screen sharing. I'm going to see if it works. You all will tell me if it works. Yeah, it says it's paused. Okay, never mind. We'll just advance it like this. That'll be fine. Okay. So I used a little model, an acronym that I use called ARISE, and it just stands for awake. Did you make your team member awake or aware of what it is you need? And there are a number of components to how to make somebody awake and aware. And it's often the most important starting point is, did you do this step? And if you haven't done this step in this way, then it's hard to assess the remaining issues. So next one is resources. That's the R. I stands for inexperienced. S stands for skill, and E stands for engagement. Those are really the five reasons people don't perform. And I'm going to walk you through how to think about those. So as I'm going through this training, I want you to have active in your mind, if you can, if you have one, an example of someone who you know you need to get them to do something different, or you know that you maybe had a conversation with them and they just didn't do it, and you're wondering why the thing isn't happening that you need to happen. So let's see, I've got to move some of my people around here. I've got to hide you guys so that I can see what I'm doing. Okay, good enough. All right, so the first thing is, have I, in the awareness, have I made them awake? One is, have I communicated my expectations? Now, the vast majority of leaders will say, yes, of course I have. I told them I want to do this, and so I communicated my expectations. The reality is, when you communicate expectations, you are working on alignment and buy-in. And alignment happens through a series of conversations, usually marked by misunderstanding. It's very, very common because the semantic range of words that you mean don't always match perfectly to the semantic range of words that they receive. So you might need to expect a few conversations for it to actually land. And here are some questions or prompts that I'm going to ask you to see if you've done this in the kind of specificity that's needed in order to create clarity. This is the most important thing in managing an organization, is creating lots of clarity. So have I clearly defined the target we're aiming for? So instead of just saying, have I communicated my expectations? The next level down is, have you defined the target? Do you know what the target is? And have you pointed directly to that target? The next one is, have I told them how to get there? Now, there are some cases where you don't know how to get there. But if you already know this is the target we're aiming for, and I need you to do these three or four things in order to get to that target, make sure you don't expect them to read your mind. Now, if you are trying to train them or develop them, let them know, I'm not going to tell you how to get there. That's your job to figure out and come to me with a plan. Both are fine, but you want to make sure you're addressing not only the what, specifically what target I'm aiming for, but also the how. How am I actually expecting you to find your way there? And if you want them to decide, you tell them, it's up to you to decide that. If you know how, you need the how. Let's talk a bit more specifically then about the how. In some cases, there may be a very specific sequence that's required, a sequence of choices, stages, gates that they have to pass through before a particular thing actually happens the way you want it to happen. And a sequence is different sometimes than prioritization. So this is also an important distinction that can sometimes help people. So in the case of a sequence, it's you need to do this first, this second, this third. In the case of priority, what we're talking about is what thing you should spend more effort, time, and energy on, and what thing you should spend less time, effort, and energy on. So for example, step one might be really simple and easy to do, but the most important step is step three, and I want you to spend 80% of your effort on step three and only 20% of your effort on step one and two. And so that's about creating that emphasis. Now, here again, if you're an expert and you already know the answers and you know you want it a certain way, it is your responsibility to communicate that with that level of specificity, and don't necessarily assume that they know what you're talking about. So you're almost doing like a mini training. Now, if you're managing someone who you know does a job that you've never done and you don't actually know how to do, which often happens, you'll hire somebody to do something, then you can say, I trust you to decide what's best here. I assume you're the expert. You know what to do. And if you're not getting the outputs, then you can double click and go, hey, what? Tell me what the steps are. What are the priorities? How do you weight certain things? Because we're not getting the results we want. And I want to dig in with you to understand that. In which case, they're guiding you, but you're using these prompts to figure out what is going to help them get clarity. So that's the prioritization. And then this is probably the most important. Like, you don't always have to do priority and you don't always have to do sequence. But once you've conveyed what it is you want them to do, one of the most important things that I can suggest you try, especially if you're noticing you're not getting the result, if you're finding people not responding, not doing it on time, not doing it in the way you want, have a clarifying conversation and then verify that they share your understanding. And here is how you will verify. You will say to them, okay, we had a great conversation. I think we're in agreement. I think we've got alignment on what's going on, what's needed. I just need you to do one other thing for me. If you could just document that, email, Slack, text, doesn't really matter how, document your understanding of our agreement and I'll confirm it. And something really interesting happens. Somebody will say, oh yeah, I got it. And they go to sit down to write the email that says, yes, I understand. And as they start generating it, they are integrating while they generate. So the act of generating, it would not work if you said, I'm going to send you an email detailing what we just discussed. This wouldn't work because they're still passive receivers. You need them to be actively generating so that they're integrating that very thing. So again, you don't have to do this with every single time you give somebody a directive, but when you know it's high stakes or when you know it's not working right, you ask them to generate the email. And when they generate it, I'll tell you 9 times out of 10, there'll be one thing in there that you'll correct. You'll clarify, you'll add nuance, you'll notice something's missing, and then you'll send it back to them and clarify, and now you have a documented record of it. That little subtle thing I have seen clean up a lot of issues in organizations. It doesn't solve everything, but it can solve a lot of things. If you just say, hey, make sure you send me this email and then I'll confirm it once I've seen it. And a weird thing happens when they've generated the email and you add the clarification, they are far more likely to integrate that clarification because it's their piece of work they put together. So they're actually taking it on board in a different way. So those were a couple of key things there. So I'm going to pause there and let people ask any questions you might have. Comments or questions about anything I just shared?
I personally don't have any questions, but I think that makes complete sense because one of the things that we struggle with is how Davia was saying, you know, she says something, and even just when we've had meetings with Debbie, Davia, and myself, you know, she'll say something and one of us might hear a certain thing or understand it a certain way. And then, so we get frustrated because we feel like we're spinning our wheels over here and Debbie's like, oh no, I got it, or vice versa. And so we definitely hear different things. And if it's happening with just the 3 or 4 of us people, you know, that are meeting, it's definitely happening with the 22 people all coming together in a meeting and just having people shake their heads and say they get it, turning around and not really understanding.
Yep. Yep, pretty common. And so what you'd want to do there in that case is your direct manager, you first of all, in the case of Davia, is it Davia? Is that how you pronounce your name?
Yeah, that's how I say it. Yeah, Davia.
In the case of Davia, you would first want to make sure that your frontline manager, not your frontline, your lieutenants really have an aligned understanding with you. So you want to make sure they do that exercise with you if you're noticing there's a gap there. If that's not where the gap is, then what needs to happen is that lieutenant who all these frontline people report to, you would ask all those frontline people, hey, shoot me a quick email, each of you. I know it sounds tedious, but I promise it's going to help us all with alignment. Shoot me a quick email with your understanding of what Davia is asking for. And then you'll just review all the emails and be like, yep, you got it. Yep, you got it. And you send it back. And then that becomes a little record. If they're not doing their job, you have proof that you did step one. And you really need that proof in order to hold someone accountable. You got to be able to say, not only did I communicate it, you acknowledged it, you verified it, you got the right answer. So now we got to dig into the next thing, which we're going to go into shortly. So that's how you would maybe tactically do that in your context. It doesn't have to be quite that involved every time, but there may be key things that you want to do that on.
I think okay, the email's good. A good idea. My issue that is the ones that don't understand speaking up or feeling confident to say, I don't get it.
Yeah. So what the reason that you're asking them, we want you to just to document your understanding of this. If they don't understand it, it will be evident, even if they think they understand it.
So by documenting, then we'll be able to go to them and say, let's say this in a different way. Or
what will happen is, so you'll give me an instruction, and then your lieutenant, whoever that may be, I don't know how if you have multiple ones, but whoever the next person is that I report to. So you're the CEO giving a directive. My direct supervisor will say to me, hey, can you put in writing to me your understanding of what Davia is asking for? And presumably your lieutenant knows exactly what you're asking for. You guys are in lockstep and aligned already. That's the first thing you got to make sure is there. Assuming that's there, then what you're doing is you're saying, okay, send me an email. And I, Shane, I'm going to generate an email or a text or a Slack or whatever. And I'm going to say, I think Davia is asking me to do X, Y, and Z by this day. And if I send it to my supervisor and she's like, that isn't at all what Davia wanted, then she gets to have the follow-up conversation. Hey, thanks for your email. I want to clarify a few key things. It's this, not that. It's this by this date, not that. And that way you're having that dialogue and that conversation, and then you're establishing the agreement that way.
Gotcha.
You've got a caption in writing. You've got a chance for them to generate it. That's the most important thing. So you've given the dictate. They generate it in writing in their own words. And then you'll start to notice, like, oh, of 22 people, we got 22 different understandings of the one thing that they've actually said. And that's super normal. It's very common, actually. And so you shouldn't take it personally. You shouldn't be irritated by it. You should expect that that will happen. And so that's why it's important for you to think through, okay, I'm about to communicate a directive to the company, and I want to make sure that they get these points. And you'll go through my prompts, these three prompt questions, you know, did I say the right sequence? Did I clearly define the target? Did I emphasize priorities? Whatever it might be. So that's one way to do this. Now I'm going to give you another way to do that, and that's next. So that may be one of the problems you are facing is this kind of lack of clarified expectations. But there's another one, and I wish I had this in the animated version, but I can't do it on my screen. Are you guys able to see that okay? Okay.
Yeah.
So this is called staging the ascent. You may or may not know this, but when you climb Everest, what happens is you spend like a week or three or six at base camp. And then what happens is you will make an ascent up to camp one, spend the night, then go back down to base camp. Then you go back up to camp two, then down to camp one, then back to base camp. And then you go to camp three, and the next day you make the ascent. It's like a really bizarre, like up and down. And all you're doing is you're acclimatizing your body to the altitude. And my experience in change management is exactly that. The way you get buy-in is you begin to think through, how do I lead change in an organization? And the way you lead change is by giving them an acclimation period. So this is more like you would use this when it's a fairly large scale, big initiative, something that's complex, something that would change the way they work. Maybe you're going to introduce a new software. Maybe you're going to introduce a new set of strategic priorities. Maybe you're going to introduce a new way you're doing performance management. Maybe you're going to do new values. Maybe you're going to do whatever. And I've used this technique for companies as big as 70,000, and it works brilliantly. And that's some of the hardest things to get buy-in and alignment around, that scale, so much complexity. And the reason it works is because it introduces one of the most important aspects of change management, which is choice. So think about this. One of the hardest things to do in life is to have a change happen. Humans don't like change. We're resistant to change. Even good change. I'm getting married. I'm buying a house. These are things that are hard and demanding, and I want them, but I don't want to do everything that comes with it, the effort. Now imagine you're in a corporate setting where you have no choice. It's being done to you, and you are already resistant to change anyway. So any big new grand idea that Davia or anybody has or Dorothy has, people are going to be like, okay, why do I have to do this? I don't want to do this. So the way this works is, you give people staging the ascent, which is camp one is, I know that it exists. I know that this idea, this new thing is happening, but we want you to know you don't have to care about it. You don't have to agree with it. You just have to know it exists. Then after you've gotten people to that level, then you take them to camp two, which is understanding. You still don't have to care about it. You still don't have to agree with it. But I do want you to understand it. I want you to know what it is, why it is, the implications for you and your role. I want to make sure you ask every question you can without even asking you to change anything. We want you to be a part of that conversation. My only goal is to get you to understand the change or the directive or the introduction of whatever thing it is. Camp three is enrollment. And enrollment is not the same thing as agreement. What I'm saying at enrollment is, I would like you to align your behaviors to this decision. You can still disagree with it, but we want you to act in alignment or in enrollment with it. And when you make that distinction, something really interesting happens. People feel they can hold on to their integrity and still act. Because they can go, I think this is a bad idea. I disagree with it. I don't like it. But you're not asking me to like it. You're asking me to act on it. If you can get everybody in your organization to enrollment, that is the win. Camp 3 is as high as you ever need to go in order to lead change in an organization. There are two steps beyond that, which are icing: ownership and leadership. Ownership is, it's not just yours anymore, it's mine now. I like it so much that I feel like it's mine. And leadership is, I'm not only is it mine, I'm innovating it. I'm making it better. And I'm leading that through the system for others. Not everybody will get there, and you don't need them to get there. That's completely their choice. Why is this important? What is the psychology behind this model? The psychology behind this model is, people are allowed time to adapt. They're given the respect of choice. How am I giving them a choice? I mean, we're going to do this thing. They don't have a choice in that. Like, at the end of the day, we're doing it. So I'm not having a debate here. So how is that choice? I'll tell you how. Camp 1 gives you the choice to not care. Camp 1 gives you the choice to not agree. Camp 2 gives you the choice to not care and not agree. Camp 1 gives you the choice to not even understand. Those are choices. Like, I'm going to choose, and you giving me the permission to not care and not agree is awesome. Thank you. Because I do want to express that I don't care and I don't agree and I think this is dumb. And I want the freedom to do that. And you've given me that freedom. Even if you get to enrollment, what's fascinating is enrollment, which was a C on the scale, is now an A. And now you have these levels beyond, which is another choice point. They get to go, well, I'm enrolled, but you know what? What she's talking about is awesome, or what he's talking about is great. I want to build this thing. I want to build on this. I'm excited about this. That's their choice. They get to do that if they want. So this may be another reason you're not getting the performance. If you've told people to do something, it's very common people go to base camp and they go, we've got this new thing we want you to go do. Ready, go. And then nobody does what they say. And they're just like, what is wrong with these people? Why will they not do the thing that I want them to do? The answer is, you may not have staged the ascent. And in a scaled organization of 70,000 people, it plays out differently than it does in a group of 20. In a group of 70,000, you have to cascade every camp for every layer in the organization, meaning your lieutenants need to be at least at camp understanding before you get anybody else to awareness. Your lieutenants have to be at enrollment before you get anybody to understanding, and here's why. If you have everybody at awareness and then everybody at understanding, but no one's at enrollment, there's no one above the other person, what happens is, I'm a direct report, Dorothy is my boss, and Davia is the CEO, and Davia comes out and comes with this big idea. Dorothy and I are both at awareness now. Dorothy has no understanding of why it is, even though she's my boss. She's certainly not enrolled in the idea. She just got notified. And I go to Dorothy and I go, Dorothy, what the heck is Davia doing? Why is this happening? And Dorothy goes, don't know. I learned about it today, just like you. In that moment, Dorothy has been forced to collude against Davia because she just went like that. The moment Dorothy does that, even though she's being truthful and honest, what it signals to me as an employee is Davia has no idea what's going on. Like, she's clueless about who's doing what and who's not. Like, what? I don't know if I trust this. Whereas if I go to Dorothy and I go, what's going on? And Dorothy goes, oh yeah, we had a meeting last week and this is what we were told and this is what it means and don't worry about it. In the next meeting, you're going to get a chance to really understand more like we already have. And I calm right down. And now I know we're on a path together. And now I know who knows what and how. So all of this stuff is really critical, especially if you're going to scale an organization. You've got to know how to do this. So I'm going to just pause there. I know that's a lot. There's like fire hose stuff here. This is video 12 of module 1. I go deeper and there's a little more help there. But comments or questions about any of this from anybody?
I feel this because I know when I come up with an idea, sometimes I'm sharing it with everybody at the same time. And I've got to stop that because the next thing happens, I get 10 to 15 questions from Debbie and Jessica.
Yep.
What are we doing? What's going on here? They're asking me this. What do I say? Well, I'm not giving them the power to, got to stop.
Yep.
I kind of did that this morning, but I went to Jessica and said, hey, this is what I'm having the meeting for, and this is what we're going to be doing. You okay with this? So that she could be ready aware of it. And I think that was helpful to her. So she didn't look like, I don't know what we're doing.
What Jessica needs to be at least understanding before you make anybody else aware. And I'm telling you that I've literally shown this graphic to people in an organization and told them the meeting we're about to have is at awareness. And I circle awareness. And I'm like, your job is to not care, not agree. We just want you to know that something's coming. And it's this. Next week, I'm going to try to get you all to understanding. You still won't have to care. You still won't have to agree, but we do want you to understand. And whatever you do, do not skip that step, because we don't want you joining in on something that you don't understand. And then we'll try to get to enrollment. And once we're there, we're done. So that's the journey we're on together. And everybody suddenly, it's an amazing how rapidly it accelerates change and buy-in because of that choice and because of that cascading trust. So yeah, I would say slow things down in order to speed things up. This will slow it down a little bit. It'll force you to rethink through how you're going to have those series of conversations. But once you've had those series of conversations, your buy-in is radically higher, much faster. I've seen organizations do this without this technique, and it'll take 5 years to get people bought in and aligned. And it's just hair pulling the whole way. And I've seen people do this within 4 months, depending on the scale and layer and all that. Within 3 to 4 months, they have 100% buy-in in the company. People are moving in the direction they want them to.
Shane, did I hear you say that you literally like show your team members this chart? Okay, got it.
Yep. And you don't have to, but like sometimes it's useful at a really large scale. Like when I do we're going to reset the vision, we're going to redo the values, we're going to whatever. And I just say, hey, this is our change management map. And anytime I come to you and we're going to talk about changing something in the organization, my commitment to you is I'm going to take you on this journey every time. You're going to get really good at this journey. And what happens is people start getting to enrollment after like the second meeting. They're just like, hey, we know where you're going. Thanks for the permission to go slow, but we're ready to go fast. And so it actually has like a little bit of momentum. So you're welcome to use this graphic and just tell people this is the journey we're going on. This is what it means. This is why we're doing it. We respect you. We know that change is hard in life and we want to make it as easy as possible. And here's what it looks like. And go ahead.
So is the idea that basically after you get through understanding that, you know, if you don't then have enrollment, like they don't agree with it at that point, then that just means that you haven't done a good enough job on the understanding step?
Could be. Or it's also possible that they're not a fit for the organization. And that's the other choice they get, you know? And so if you've done the best you can and they're still not doing it, you just go, hey, we've done everything we can to kind of give you the permissions and the space and the time to get to this place. We're not asking you to agree with it. We're just asking you to align to it. Just align your behaviors to it. We're noticing that's not happening. That's okay. You have that choice, but there are implications to that choice. And it may mean that you're not a long-term fit for the organization because you're having a hard time finding your way into the thing we're doing. You know, and so some things you can take months to get there. Some things you need to take weeks. Sometimes this can be done in a few days. Depends on how many people you're trying to do it with. Depends on how many layers there are. Depends on how complicated the idea is. Depends on how many people it affects. Depends on how much of their work life it affects. For sure, if you are saying, oh, we need to hire a new COO, you better make sure you do this process. Because if you show up one day and you're like, hey, we hired a new COO. Everyone's like, what? What? Why? What happened? Where are we doing? You know, so like when you're restructuring, for sure, something like this has to happen because restructuring is playing with power and relationships. And so it's super high impact.
How do you,
I have a question.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you can go.
I was just gonna ask, like, how do you determine like if a decision is big enough that it does require this versus it's something so minor that you don't really need to have multiple calls, you can just announce something and be done?
Usually I test it with the lieutenants, whoever your second in command is. I would say, hey, this is an idea I have. My feeling is it's a non-issue. What do you think? And they'll be like, whoa. No, that'll have huge implications. You need to slow it down. So the second in command usually has, or third or whatever, usually that C-suite team, if you have a big enough team, whoever's second in command usually has enough line of sight to what's going on below to gauge whether or not this is a materially big change or kind of something everyone's going to be relieved by. And that's another thing I would say. Sometimes you're going to do some really big change, but you're doing it because you've been hearing so much anger and frustration in the team, and you know this thing's going to solve that. It's going to be received as a relief. And so they're going to be like, oh, okay, thank you. And so you can do this rapidly. You know, you're just going to acknowledge a couple things. Like, hey, in that case, you'd be like, hey, awareness, we heard you loud and clear. We know you're frustrated. We're going to address it next week. We're going to introduce this new software. You don't have to worry about it now. We're going to get there. The next day, hey, everybody, here's the software. Here's a little video explaining it. Here's a meeting we're going to have later at the end of the day as to ask any questions. It's designed to solve the thing you've all been talking about. And then like a week later, you go, now that you've had a week to play with it and test it out and ask any questions you've had, water cooler conversations. Today, we're launching, want everybody to say yes. We want you to be at Camp 3 and enrolled. And then that's how that goes, right? So it is art, but what it gives you is a map that you can kind of accordion however you think you need to. And it's also okay if you learn like, oh my gosh, we went way too fast on that one. That's going to happen. Like you're going to go, we thought it was no big deal to get a COO. And then it turns out it's a really big deal. Okay, good to know. Learned. Lesson learned. Next time we're going to be a little more careful as we do it. But without knowing the tool exists, most leaders are just left kind of going, okay, time to make a change. Ready, go. And because I have authority and I'm the boss and I pay your salary, your job is to say yes to me every time I say go left. And what happens is humans like choice and they like to have it the way they want it, when they want it. And so they will unconsciously and in some cases consciously collude against you. So this is a way to prevent that.
I did have one other question on that. So do you see a difference when, trying to figure out how to word this. Basically, I guess my question is, at what stage do you feel it's most efficient to have a sort of timeline? So if we are at base camp and we're launching an idea, is that the best time to tell, like, let's say our staff that, hey, in 1 week, we're going to meet back up? Or do you think it's better to wait until a further step? Or do you see a difference in that?
No, I actually quite like pre-planning all this, the camps, the dates of each camp that you're goal setting. And the reason that's so critical is if you have multiple layers, you have to make sure, oh, we want to have this meeting. We want everyone an understanding of this meeting. That means the second layer of management needs to be an understanding the day before or the week before. So now right. I know, oh, okay, I'm cascading the camps. But yeah, for sure, I love the idea of dates. And maybe the whole thing only takes a week, depending on how hard it is. Or maybe it takes 4 months or maybe even 6 months, depending on how big the thing is that you're taking on, how big the team is, and how many people you have. So the more people you have, the more layers you have, and the bigger the change you're wanting to make requires longer timelines. That's all.
Right. Okay.
Allie, I think you were going to ask something, or maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I was trying to wait till everyone was done because I have kind of like a really overarching question about this. Because I guess I wanted your perspective on, I guess the conversation started with, hey, we're going to talk about performance management, right? And then going into this, diagram, whatever. It's all about change management. So I'm really curious about your perspective on, is it really like you have to think about performance management in terms of change management? Like things are, like basically knowing where I'm at and coming into my organization where there's already a lot of supposedly, I guess, expectations that are set. Would it be worth going through this and just reestablishing those expectations to make sure that everyone is actually understanding what they are, where it's less so change management and more just
Yeah, I think in your case, there's potential value in that. And here's why. You got put in a new role and the rules changed for everybody. And you moved the goalposts without even knowing it because you're a new person. So anytime a new manager steps into a new role, they move the goalposts. Often the game even changes. So everybody thought, well, this is what was expected of me. And now you come in and you expect different things. And you don't even know what the differences are because you weren't there with the previous manager. So that's a big disruptive thing for most people when a new person comes in. Sometimes staging the ascent is really helpful in that. I can't say that it's always got to be there. And I wouldn't say that performance management is always change management. I would say anytime a leader makes a decision and gives a directive that is different than the one before, you are engaging in a change management process, whether you know it or like it. And so any shift or change may need some version of this. And all I want you to know about this metaphor is not that you need the techniques of every step, but you need to know that humans inherently are resistant to that change. Yeah. And all you're trying to do is make it easier for them to turn that corner. And I've just found this to make a huge difference.
Got it.
Good. Okay, so these are just a few things that you want to think about. Staging descent is really important when you know it's something that you're not going to let a lot of people be part of the decision. It's a unilateral command from on high. This is going to change. Staging the ascent is really helpful. When it's something that doesn't have to come from on high, one of the best ways to get buy-in and therefore performance, right? So buy-in and performance are linked directly, is to use the 80-20 process. Here's what that looks like. You start with, I need to do a certain thing. I want your input, team, whatever the team is. The first thing I need from you is your frontline data. I need your opinion, perspective, your sense of what's happening. I want to gather as much data as I can from you. I then, with me and my lieutenants or me alone, doesn't really matter, I will analyze and strategize and build a strategy around the data that I got from you. And then I'm going to present it back to you 80% baked because I know what the parameters are. I know what things are non-negotiables and I'm going to set it up in such a way that I know it's pretty much done. And then there's a remaining 20% that can be pushed back on, worked out, refined. And I want you guys to take that remaining 20% all the way to the end. Once you've done that, we finalize agreements and we move forward. What you're doing in the 80-20 process is you're automatically doing staging the ascent without having to formalize it. You're doing a different version where they are co-creators of the outcome, but within the proper parameters. So the last thing you want to do is everybody gets in a room. We're all going to brainstorm about what our goals are for next year. It's going to take forever. It's going to be terrible. The way you want to do goal setting is you'd say, hey, everybody come in, tell me the biggest things you're seeing that are happening, biggest challenges, greatest threats, greatest strengths, company weaknesses. What are you seeing? Let me gather all that. Then we'll come up with what we think are the big goals, what we think are the key performance indicators. We're going to present them to you, push back, argue, debate. Then we're going to land on it and it'll be done. And that's another way to get buy-in wrapped up. So there you go. I've given you like a number of things. One is make sure it's clear. Make sure that people respond and generate their understanding. That's when you haven't taken the time on staging the ascent, you haven't taken the time to do an 80-20, and it's smaller scale. That's when you just say, hey, can you quickly send me an email and tell me what you understood? Let's make sure we're agreed. Bigger change, you use staging the ascent, especially when it's purely top-down. And then when you have time and when it's appropriate, use the 80-20. Any one of those three tools or techniques, if you deploy them properly, you will get a huge boost in your buy-in from people. So that's the starting point. Any comments or questions about this before I move to how do I then deal with the performance of an employee after I've done all of this? I've done the staging descent. We've confirmed we've got expectations aligned. We already got all the right answers. They're still not performing. Why? That's what we'll get to next. Comments or questions about this before we go to the next steps. All right. So the other four reasons. Number one is skill. All you're going to do here in this case is you're just going to ask, if I've done all these other things, is this a skill problem? Is there some technical competence that I thought they had that they don't have? Is there some critical thinking ability they're demonstrating they don't really have the more that I talk with them? They don't know how to do business planning. They don't know how to do people or project management, communication, time management. There's tons of skills, right? So that's pretty straightforward. Second one is motivation. So they might have all the skills, but maybe they're struggling in some material way. They're just not enjoying the work. They might have low emotional intelligence. They may have no connection to purpose. They're just showing up in this some tedious job that they're being paid for and they hate being there. Maybe they have life circumstances, birth, death, divorce, health, whatever, right? So you want to pay attention to maybe this isn't skill. Maybe there's some engagement issue that is at play here. And as a manager, it's my job to help them stay engaged. And so we'll talk about ways to do that. Next one is experience. You know, do they know what they don't know? Do they know how to ask the right questions? Have they lived through enough cycles to anticipate unintended consequences? Do they have a broad enough exposure to tools and solutions and methods for doing the job? Do they know how to benchmark people, whether that's a good talent or not a great talent? And in some cases, if they're really experienced, are they still curious? Sometimes really experienced people get locked in one idea and one way of being, and they don't understand the world has radically changed and new tools and methods are there and they've got to learn new tricks. So that's another area you might be like, ooh, too much experience here or too little experience, and that's all. And the last one is resources. So resourcing refers to, are there structure problems in the organization? Maybe politics, maybe weird misaligned accountabilities where you're like, I don't know what's going on, or too many direct reports and I don't know how to manage all of them. There's just too many people. I don't have enough bandwidth. Staffing, are you properly supported? Money, do you have the right funding? Is there some sort of conflict in the relationship that if you could resolve that, all these problems go away? So these are the four reasons after you as a leader have made them aware that people don't do what you want them to do. The underlying assumption is nobody joins your organization and says, I really hope I don't show up and perform. I really hope I fail. Everybody wants to succeed, even in a job they hate. There's some level of, I at least want to do a good enough job. And so if that's the truth, then you want to ask, what do you think it is that might be there? So how do you use this then? Well, first is you just start with your own hypothesis. You know, if you were to imagine what might be the issue be. Then what you do is you have a meeting with them in a conversation and you lay out, hey, we've made clear what the things are. We've noticed this. We've had this conversation a few times. We're noticing it. We're still not getting the performance we need. The question I have is, I wonder why. And I'd like to explore that with you. So when I think about these things, I think in terms of skill, engagement, experience, and resources. Based on what I'm seeing, I think you got plenty of experience. I don't doubt that. As far as I can tell, you seem really engaged. I know you have the skill, so I wonder if we're having a resource problem. What do you think is going on? Or whatever, right? So you have whatever conversation, you might be like, well, is skill and resource together, I think, is that what you're seeing? And you kind of try to get around the same side of the table with them. And you're trying to assess together, like, what do you see happening here? Because this is what I'm seeing. Are you seeing that? So that's how you have that kind of a conversation. You do step one, make them aware. Step two, have the conversation by assessing who and what are they. And then after you come to some kind of an agreement about what you think the problem is, then you design the interventions. So, you know, as a skill, if it's a skill problem, that's pretty straightforward. You can get a mentor or a coach. You can require trainings. You can adjust your outcomes and deadlines to match their skill level. You can have them shadow you or somebody else until they gather that skill. If it's an engagement issue, there's a lot, you know, a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about in the entire training gets at the heart of engagement. But here are just a few cheat sheet kind of items. One is just to ask them, like, hey, you seem really kind of down working here. You don't seem very engaged or excited. Am I reading that right? Got it. Okay. What do you think is contributing to that? You might ask, what do you most want? You might ask, what do you need? You might just say thank you. You know, like sometimes just an acknowledgement and a thank you goes a really long way to boosting engagement. Just to go, hey, I want you to know I see you and I notice that this is going on and I notice that it's been hard And I really appreciate that. Sometimes it's you as the leader apologizing. One of the most powerful things a leader can do. Hey, I'm really sorry. I regret that this happened because I said this in this way. If I were in your shoes, that would really demotivate me. And I want to reset that with you. So that's a couple of key tricks for engagement. Experience. Once again, you'll scale responsibility based on experience. You usually, when there's a low experience, you install more points of discussion along the way, more decision points, so that they're not too far down the road before they've kind of already created the thing you've created. Follow up more frequently is related to that. And then if it's too much experience, you invite curiosity and you ask, what's your interest in learning and reinventing a new way of doing what you've done for so well for so long? How exciting is that to you to think about reinventing the way you operate? Because the world's changed and there's a new set of tools and a new way. And you just may be like, I'm done with that. I don't want to do that. Okay, good to know. So I'll pause there. Those are the big key ideas. Comments or questions about any of this. So hopefully you've got maybe a person in mind or a conversation you've had, and you've looked at everything I've just shown you, and we can just start workshopping a few key things if that would be helpful. And Sierra, believe me, I'm thinking about you. And I know last week we had a good conversation, and I want to follow up with you about this because I think it's relevant to what's going on here.
I can't wait. I have more information too.
Fire away.
Oh, well, I've been telling you about this team member for as long as I've been here, and I've been having conflicts with them, but I found out last week that the rest of the team is having conflicts with them.
Well, that's a relief.
Right. It is a relief because I thought it was a me thing because, again, my boss it's not a her thing. But the rest of the team was like, we really don't want to work with her. So I brought that to my boss, and my boss is like, okay, so what you're telling me is we need to manage this person out, or I need to find another place for them. And I'm like, yeah, because I can't have them on my team anymore. You know, I'll give you 2 months kind of thing. So that was interesting.
Oh, that's great. That's perfect. I'm so glad. Yeah, I was thinking about you this week and felt like that was so unfair. So I'm glad that totally changes the game.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's really difficult trying to manage the situation, but now it's like, she's not a terrible employee. It's just not a fit, you know?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Good. Okay, great. Awesome. Other comments, questions on this before we move to kind of general coaching stuff?
No, this is brought to light of an employee that we just lost to another position. It wasn't necessarily more money or anything. It's just the employee was really, really experienced. And I don't think I used her or created enough curiosity or gave her the control over an account that she craved, but I didn't recognize it in time.
Oh, good insight. Good awareness. Yeah, that's another thing that can happen with a lot of experience is if they feel capped in some way. Like if you really aren't as expert as they are in something, I'm not saying that's true for you, but that can also be a killer for people's performance. If they're just like, I was doing something 10 times the size of this and I'm being treated like an intern, you know, in an extreme case, that can certainly have an impact.
I just need to figure out how to recognize that when...
I think the main issue that we had with that was that we sort of lost trust early because issues happened and we had complaints from some of the doctors that we work with. And so I think that's something that we need to work on better managing is as soon as we lose trust, just like anybody, I guess we have a hard time rebuilding that or letting them earn that back maybe as quickly as we would hope or as they would hope. And so it's like we constantly feel like we can't add more to their work because they obviously made the mistakes for a reason, whether it was training or lack of knowledge or rushing through or whatever it was. And I guess we just need to find a way to come to and decide what that actual underlying issue is quicker.
Yeah. So Jessica, you bring up a good point around just so you know, the first 90 days is where everything is made or broken. the first 90 days of anybody's employment, they start off with 100% credibility. And if they make a critical mistake or a misstep, they lose that credibility. And it is incredibly hard, if not impossible. It's not impossible. It has been done to regain that credibility. It can take a year or more. If you make it through the first 90 days without making any critical misstep, then it's actually quite hard to lose your credibility. You can make mistakes after the first 90 days and people will remember the trust that they gave you and you handled it well. And so it is easier to recover from. And so bonus one is the first 90 days success plan. It's how to make sure that whoever you hire follows a step-by-step way to make sure that first 90 days is killer and really effective and they don't make critical mistakes. So that's one.
That makes sense.
One tool for you guys to use. Another one for you guys to use is the five leadership languages. And so if you go to my website, shanehips.com, there's a link to the five leadership languages. And when you take that quiz, it'll tell you how somebody likes to be led. And so if they score really, really high on empowerment and really, really low on mentoring, that's a really good indicator that you want to be careful how you manage them. Actually, that's a whole nother training that I already just did. So we'll do it in a few weeks again, you know, probably in a month or two. That is also quite helpful, but you can use it without the training.
Okay, great. Thank you. We use something sort of like that. I guess we use like the DISC assessment, the DISC assessment. But yeah, we definitely maybe could find a better one about work and...
All of these personality things are really useful and good. So, but they all do slightly different things. So the reason that I designed the five leadership languages and that quiz is because I noticed that leaders were dealing with a minefield that they didn't know anything about, that people had certain needs of a leader that would establish their credibility. And if you were able to see those needs, those underlying needs, you as a leader could work within that language, that need set, and therefore build your credibility and boost their motivation. And what I learned over the years of doing 360s of CEOs of companies was I noticed the patterns that emerged. And so I took all of those patterns and I turned it into these five leadership languages. And so a pretty classic example would be like, there's a polarity between empowerment and mentoring. Those are two different languages. Some people get a job and start to work for you because they want to be mentored. And that's their highest language. And if you're an absentee leader who doesn't want to deal with people and really can't be bothered trying to train somebody, they will lose motivation and vanish. If they score really high in empowerment and you are a super hands-on, let me teach you, train you, they're going to be like, I just want you to hand me the ball. I know more than you. So you trying to mentor me isn't going to help me very much. And so knowing that, that's a key difference. There are five pairs that are just like that.
When we interview people, we let them, the one thing I say is, I need you to let me know what you need. If you don't understand, if you know how to do something and you want to run with it, run with it. Just tell me, I'll run with it. If you are the type of person that likes somebody to walk you through something, I need you to tell me that because I don't know what I don't know. And we just started saying this in interviews and it kind of has helped with some of the people we brought on because it's given them permission to raise their hand. But then it really would be nice to know, this would help Jessica. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so just like, to be clear, people often don't even know what they need until they're presented with like the quiz questions. It'll say things like, I like it when my boss ... And it's a sentence complete. When my boss does X, Y, and Z. And then I can say, I really like that. I really don't like that. I really don't care. And what happens is it outputs a score that you can see like, oh, I didn't even know those categories were the things I should be thinking about. But yeah, it matters a lot to me. Like proximity and autonomy are really important, or connection and boundaries, really important. And so when you understand those things, it will help you navigate the minefield of your team. And it'll help them know what their landmines are. A lot of them don't even know what they are. They just assume it's how everybody is.
I was thinking too, that if they did that, then whenever we get ready to onboard people and we're into the software or how an account needs to be handled, it would help Jessica, who usually has to do this, not spend a whole 8 hours when she's expecting to spend only 1 hour.
Yep.
You know, or doing, like, I'm thinking like Maria that we thought was more experienced, but her personality is that she needs somebody to walk her through it, but Jessica wasn't expecting to spend that much time with her. And then right. Jessica's frustrated. And then I'm frustrated because Jessica's frustrated. And I'm like, well, that's not, you know. So it just, you understand what I'm saying, Jessica?
Yeah, no, I do.
Because we expect to come in hands-on and ready to go, and they're not. And it's kind of like a letdown because we had such high hopes during the interview, you know, and now we're realizing we're having to do more hand-holding, which I am not a hand-holder. Jessica's not. Jessica is. Jessica's been forced into that position. I'm not absentee boss. It's just I have a hard time explaining what's in my head.
Which,
or I get frustrated because I can't push the button fast enough.
What you just said is just, first of all, good self-awareness, but it's also an indicator of why buy-in is going to be difficult for you, because at the heart of your task as a leader is to articulate clearly, not just in language, but in how you structure conversations. What I did with Staging the Ascent is how you structure a series of conversations, what the goals are, what the objectives are, what you're trying to do, what you're not trying to do. All of that will create more clarity. And once you have clarity, you can get buy-in. So it makes perfect sense to me why you've been struggling with buy-in based on what you just said.
Yes.
I'm thinking of like we have what we call AR reports, that Debbie's over, the AR people. I think if we had actually told them, we're having you do this so that the providers will quit asking you so many questions. That's the end goal. Do this so I don't think we ever explained that to them until like after we were having them do that. And then say, guess what? We're not getting all the questions. Well, they didn't know that was the reason why we were doing it to begin with.
Yeah, I agree. I like that picture that he was showing earlier about like the ascent and explaining an idea and all of that. I think that can definitely come in handy with a lot of the things that we present to the team.
Because we have to pivot and shift a lot, especially in medical billing, because the laws and rules change and new codes are coming in and stuff. And then I think everybody understands they have to do this modifier, this place of service code, and they're like not doing it. Well, I don't remember still being it. So anyway, yeah. Yeah.
Good.
It's just a new way of thinking through things. And it makes sense now that I hear it. It's just, man, I really screwed up these 10 years having this company. Or it feels
you haven't
like
screwed
it
up. The good news is about humans is we're highly resilient and easily able to be adjusted. You know, there's a lot of capacity to go, oh, okay, there's like a whole leadership skill I didn't know existed that I need to activate in me. And it is learnable, eminently learnable. And when you learn it, you will start to see lift in your organization. And just so you guys know, there are predictable stages in organizational growth that create breaks or breakthroughs. We've talked about this before on these calls. And so, you know, 0 to 3 million, 3 to 8 million, and 8 to 15 million. At each one of those, a completely new leadership competency is required of the senior most leader and their team in order for you to be effective and successful at getting to the next level and scaling. If you keep doing the same stuff over and over, you won't break through. You'll just break. It'll just keep cycling through over and over. So you're in the right spot. You made a great choice.
Since Jessica and Debbie, it feels like that's what's been happening, doesn't it, Jessica? We've just been in the same cycle, and we're trying to break out, but we can't.
Agreed.
Yep. This will help you a lot. This training is designed to help you with that very issue. So, awesome. Thank you. Okay, so now's the time of the call. The remaining 25 minutes or so, I just open it up for anybody who has any issue. It doesn't have to be related to this training. Anything you need some coaching on. Yes, Dorothy.
Awesome. So this has been great, by the way. Really love this topic. So I would love to just get your kind of general philosophies on compensation. And where this is coming from is a conversation that I had with our media buyer last week, where, you know, for context, like, you know, he hasn't had a ton on his plate, honestly, you know, and so, you know, he shared that he'd been feeling like a little bit, like disengaged, like just like wanting more to do. And I didn't realize he was feeling that way. I definitely had, you know, plenty of things I could have given him. And so anyway, it was good that we had that conversation, but he also mentioned that, you know, when he was job hunting and ultimately came here, that he came here over opportunities where, you know, he could have been at, you know, six figures. And, you know, here he's at basically like, I think he's at 80K salary. And, you know, his expectation was that the like profit share, you know, would get him like over that line. And it absolutely will in 2023. And, you know, I shared with him that, you know, I think that's a great target, you know, for 2023. And I think very, very feasible. But my mind, like immediately, like anytime I have a conversation like that, or just anytime, you know, I'm just very quick to want to like, okay, I should go give him a rate, like salary raise, when really like that doesn't make any sense logically in terms of like what, like the role. It's literally just like, okay, he wants to make more money. So my instinct is like, okay, well, I should pay him more money. And I'd just love to get your kind of, I don't know. I won't ramble.
You can be my boss.
Yeah. No, it's a great question. And I think
one thing I'll add real quick is I do think a lot of this comes from like, I know that I deal with like intense boss guilt of just like feeling guilty for making more money than other people and like all of this stuff. So,
right. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So compensation is kind of an art form, and obviously it's industry specific and all that fun stuff. But in simple terms, the one thing that you can be aware of is like, you know, flight risk can be real sometimes. And you want to make sure that you are, and it's a little hard to do, but you got to try to stay on top of what market rate is. So, you know, before this kind of change in interest rates and everything was starting to sort of look like the wheels were falling off and layoffs, market rate was just climbing rapidly. People were able to get huge salaries in a number of industries, not all of them. And so I had a number of clients who just called people's bluffs and lost really great people because they were like, whatever, you know, this is market rate. And they just didn't do any of the due diligence to figure out like, what are people being offered these days in this role at this level? And if it's like, oh my gosh, you're getting 120. If he could make one phone call and they're offering him 120, I'm out of market rate. And so that's what dictates it far more than, you know, for that person. You might say, well, unfortunately, we can't afford 120. So then we need to redefine the role a little bit. And so that's what can happen. Once all the layoffs started happening, it kind of reverses. Now the market rate is much lower and people are less likely to rush for a new job and they're wanting to stay where they are. And so as a business owner, it becomes a little easier to retain people without having to pay them more. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question exactly, but in general, that's the kind of thinking that I try to help my leaders see is like, are you at market rate?
Yeah.
And if you are, then you're at market rate, and what will make their determination will be nothing you have control over.
Yeah.
So I'll pause there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely think that I'm at market rate, and also like if he were to leave, it would be fine. I think that's kind of what I'm getting at is like, just like how to think about these things. Cause I feel like I'm constantly getting into situations where like, from this place of like boss guilt or whatever, like I just, you know, like I'm very quick to like throw out, like he mentioned, for example, so he'd been paying out of pocket for health insurance this year, and we are introducing health insurance next year, which he's excited about. But like, I was very quick to be like, okay, great. I'm going to give you a $500 bonus next month to like help you cover your health insurance. And you know, I think I need to figure out like how to figure out, you know, how to determine like when my like instinct to do those things is like rational and makes sense, or when it's coming from this place of just like wanting people to like me and wanting, you know, just like my Enneagram 2, if you will. Because yeah, I mean, he's absolutely at market rate, and like the bonus, like his place in like the bonus pool next year, like, I mean, he's frankly going to be getting paid probably a lot more than like what the actual role he's in dictates.
Yeah. Okay. Totally appreciate that. First, I do want to open it up to the group because I think others will have their own opinions about this that I think might be really useful for you, just the wisdom of the group. But before I do that, I do just want to anchor for you a couple of things. One of which is, as a business owner, you have taken on a considerable amount of risk that your employees have not taken on. And as a consequence, there is a differential of pay that makes a lot of sense. Like you just having that awareness of I've risked a great deal of my own time, energy, effort, and blood, sweat, and tears to build this thing that they didn't build, but they applied for. And so you want to pay them fairly. You want to be at market rate. You want to be competitive. You can be generous if you want in some cases, especially if you just think they're rock stars and you want to keep incentivizing them. But at the end of the day, just being really comfortable knowing it is offsetting risk, right? Like any investment, the more risk, the greater the reward. The lower the risk, the lower the reward. It's just the way it works. So anytime you hire an employee, they're taking much lower risk than them saying, I'm going to go out and build my own media buying agency. And I'm going to go figure out how to get my own customers and how to build my own team. And how, you know, it's an enormous investment of time, effort, and money to build that. And this employee didn't do any of that. And it's okay. They understand that. So I think that's just my comment for you about just being okay making more than other people.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Just because you're the boss. There's real reasons for it.
I'm on the same page as you with that. I actually don't make more than my employees. Some of my employees make more than I do. Because I have that guilt, because my company is not a job to me. It's something I'd love to do. And half the time I do a lot of stuff for no charge to some of my clients just because I love what I do. But it is hard when you know that you're strapped and they come to you for a raise and you have to say no. For example, in August this year, I had somebody make a HIPAA problem, a HIPAA mistake, and HIPAA finds you. And this year, my girls already know this, I usually give out big Christmas bonuses. Well, that $38,000 hit to me, fine, that no one else in the company had to feel or feeling it now because I don't have Christmas bonuses to give, even though I'm doing the best I can. And that employee wound up leaving because of the stress of it. I didn't fire over it because it was just, first of all, she didn't follow policy. I probably should have fired her, but I wanted to give her grace because she was a great employee and she took it personal as to what she did. It was just she was rushing. It was a quick mistake. And nobody was harmed, but still the government doesn't like it. But when people come to me, I really have to, first of all, I know that they need more money because they need to make ends meet. But I have to also be honest with them and say, look, this is all I can afford right now. We can relook at this in 6 months. And I think I even had this conversation with you, Debbie, didn't I? Back in March of this year. And I always make sure that I do reevaluate it with them in a time frame that I can see. But not everybody gets a raise right away. And I don't let it hold me hostage that they're going to leave if I don't give them a raise. Because if they leave, they applied for this job just like they're going to apply for the next one. Do I want them to go? No. But I hope that they get more out of my company than just a job. That's what I don't want people to have working for me. I don't want them to feel like it's a job.
That might be tough to overcome, but I hear you. I was going to comment a couple of things, Dorothy. One, making sure that, like, if you're considering a raise, that it's obviously feasible. And then two, like, just saying I could go somewhere else and get X amount isn't enough. It's like, here's the research that I've done on what the market is offering right now, and here's why I feel I align with that. Here's what I've contributed to your business, to like asking them to outline this. Here's what I've contributed to your business to actually make a raise make sense.
Yeah.
And then I think the other thing too is, and I do this, like I want a salary raise because it's a guarantee and it's something that's going to continue. But if you feel like this person maybe deserves a little bit more and they're asking for a salary raise, like what you were saying of giving a bonus to cover certain expenses, like I think that a lot of times employees don't think about that kind of stuff. That, you know, there are other ways to provide compensation that aren't just salary increases. And mm-hmm. so, you know, we're kind of past the point of, and I don't think you're in this situation of like office perks and stuff, but there are other ways to compensate yeah. people. And then the other thing I was going to say is you can also tie, you can tie expectations to a bonus as well. So you can say, look, I hear you, you need something right now to get you through to next year. The bonus that's going to happen next year, like, here's what that's going to look like. I'll give you X bonus now, but you're going to sign this bonus letter, this incentive letter that says you'll stay for the next year, or else this bonus amount will be deducted from your final paycheck. Once, you know, if you leave before that, like that kind of thing, there are different ways to structure additional compensation to help with retaining people as well. And not just being like, well, they gave me more, so heck, right. maybe I am worth more. And then just leaving off the back of that anyway.
Yeah. Well, and he wasn't he wasn't asking for a raise. Like he was actually saying like how he's excited about like where the company's going next year and like knowing that like the bonus pool is going to be bigger. I think that's kind of what I'm dealing with is like my instinct is always to like give it before they even ask. But I think the trap that I fall into is that like, I'm giving it from a place of like wanting this person to like me rather than a place of like this role deserves a compensation increase. If that makes
but sense. At the same time, like yeah. what's the module, Shane, that's like build a magnet team that people want to join? Like compensation is like, let's face it. Like I love what I do. That's part of the reason why I'm here, but I work for money. Like I need the money from my job. Now I'm not a business owner, right? But I assume that you're all in the business to make money. I don't know if anyone is a nonprofit, but like, you know, compensation is going to be a part of that package.
It is a part of it. It's actually a surprisingly small part of it. All the research shows that once you have the basic amount enough-ish, as long as you're not wildly out of market rate, it has a very low influence on decision making to stay at an organization. Far more of the decision is made on, it was module one, all those things that happen, and everything we're talking about today has an impact on that. So for sure, all of that matters. As business owners on the call, just one thing to do a little math around, a really good KPI or benchmark around your employees and the success of your business is you should be somewhere between $250,000 and about $500,000 per employee, revenue per employee. So if your revenue per employee is below $250,000, there's something not working right in the business. You're either not structured right, you don't have the right pay scales, you something's not working right. And anything over $500,000 per employee revenue, you're killing it. You're doing amazing and you can scale.
My CFO said that 3 weeks ago. Your employees should be making $250,000 for you.
Yep.
Super helpful. Thank you, everyone. I really appreciate it.
Other questions? We've got 10 more minutes. What else is on your mind?
Shane, I sent over a question to you. Literally, I think it was maybe the day after our meeting last week. My boss, out of the blue, without saying anything to me, gave me a spot bonus.
Okay.
And I said, thank you. And her response was, of course, what would I do without you? Now, for those of you that don't know why I'm here, I decided to do this program of my own volition, did ask the company to, you know, like fork up some money to help me, but I'm trying to get from a manager role to a director role. And I've been working at this company as employee number one for 2 years almost. And I was just really surprised. Of course, what would I do without you when I'm literally like, look at me, I'm looking for this position and I feel like I've earned it. And then she's just like, of course. And I'm like, great. So about that director role, I don't know.
So have you had that conversation yet?
Nope. I need to watch the full module on how to have difficult conversation.
Well, I actually don't think it's that difficult of a conversation. It's just, all you're doing is signaling for a boss or a director what you want, what matters to you. I don't know anybody who, I mean, if anyone you've ever managed came to you and said, hey, this is my goal, this is what I most want, how do I get there? What do you think needs to happen for me to get there? You've now enrolled them in wanting to help you. That's a really easy conversation. So if you haven't had it, make sure you flag that for them in a really direct, confident way. Does that sound good?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Can you tell me it again?
Yes. Well, this is recorded, so you can go back and watch this, but I'll say it again. Hey, I wanted to flag for you that I'm really interested in trying to get to a director level position. And I would love to understand from you what needs to happen in order for that to occur. Okay. What do I need to do? What do you need to see from me? I believe that I can do that. I think I've been contributing in these ways for a while. I'd love to be considered for that. How do I get there?
Yeah, it's a position that doesn't exist right now, but my boss's correct title doesn't exist right now either, right? She's the VP of people, but she really should be the CPO, right?
Yeah, and
sure. How big is the company?
So in less than 2 years, we've gone from 150 to over 1,000.
You just mentioned you were employee number one.
Yep.
So I was curious.
Yep, I was.
I feel like that's gonna bring some leverage, no?
Right? I would hope so.
It cuts both ways. And this is why it's so good that you're doing this program. Because often people that join organizations that are at a smaller scale perform beautifully. And then when it gets to a bigger scale, they don't have the skills to navigate all the ways the rules of the game change. So you're doing exactly what you need to be doing in this program to learn those very skills. The module I would tell you to focus on next is bonus 5, which is how to manage up and across. And I would review that material because I'll tell you right now that I've had multiple people in this program get promotions and raises as a direct result of that training within the 90 days they were in the program. They can credit it and link it directly back. The boss will say, hey, whatever you've been doing over here, this has been great. I don't know how you've been doing it. Keep doing it. And they're like, this one module, I just got trained. I'm doing that. And so it's very, very doable.
Just from being in this program, I think 3 or 4 weeks, right? I've been, every time we have a session and everything that I've learned so far, I'm applying. And over the last 2 weeks, my boss is like, kudos on this. You're getting kudos from somebody. You're getting kudos from this person. And I'm just like, yay, awesome.
Good for you. You're doing awesome. I'll need to take that little clip there for my marketing and promotion, what you just said.
You got it.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you. Well, congratulations. Seriously, that's so awesome. I'm glad you're getting that recognition. I'm glad you're applying it. You're doing the work. It's so exciting to see. I love doing that. I love being a part of that. So congrats.
Shane, I know we only have 5 minutes left. I have a question. And maybe this can be for another time too, but basically I know that I'm still within my 90 days and I know that I don't know what I don't know. But there are a lot of things that I am uncovering that I feel like my boss should have already put in place and they just literally don't exist. And I think that it's hindering our ability to properly serve our clients and grow, I guess. I don't know. I could go into a lot more, but since we don't have any time, thoughts? Mm-hmm. Is that a difficult conversation? Is that I create something and give it to her and say, I think we should use this? Any modules to look at for that kind of thing?
Yes. So managing up and across, same one, bonus 5. I recommend you just get familiar with that. I mean, it's not specifically going to tell you what, it's just going to help you understand how to influence up. So here's what happens. When you communicate up through power, unlike going down, which your whisperer becomes a shout, when you go communicate up through power, something really interesting happens. Your message gets forked.
Right.
And there are two different ears that your supervisor is listening through. And one is, I'm interested and curious. I want to know what you have to say. And the other is, I'm suspicious about what your motives are and why you're doing this. And I'm curious about what's really behind what you're saying. And this happens to everybody. It's impersonal. It happens to me. It happens to anybody for whom you have a direct report when you come up through power. What I do in module or bonus 5 is I show you how to use language patterns to walk around that filter so that you're heard in the way you most intend and that your input is validated. And so there's a very specific way to do it. And I don't have time to go through it today, but I recommend you watch that. And then next week, come back and let's talk about applying it in real time. We'll kind of build whatever it is you want to build. But okay, for sure, you should go to your boss and say, in order for me to be more effective, here are the things that we need. Here's what I think they should look like. And I know that they will need to come from you. Is that something, is that a conversation you'd be willing to have? And then
what if it's things that I could create, but I feel like I'm stepping on her toes by doing that?
Yeah. So I would watch bonus 5 because there's a way you can present that so that it's received, not as stepping on your toes, but okay, as proactive and taking initiative.
Okay.
And so what I'd suggest is do a little bit of thinking on that, do a little bit of building on it. And then when you come to the call next week, bring the exact conversation you want to have, and I'll help you refine it so that it'll be heard the way you intend.
Okay.
Sound good?
Yep.
Good luck, Allie. I'm looking forward to hearing about that.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Cool. That's exciting.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I think we're at the end of our time. Wishing you all very happy holidays. Anybody else? We're good. One last opportunity for questions. You're good. All right. Davia, Jessica, wonderful to have you guys join. Excited to be working with you. I know we're going to get some progress for you. You're going to see momentum. You're going to see things shift. It's exciting. This stuff really works.
It is. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Yeah, appreciate it. Okay, everybody. We'll see you. I'm on next week. I don't know if you guys are, but I'll be here.
I'll be here. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Shane.